how about that? Flash the three, pitchfork style, right in the face of Aaron Maloney. Take that, little Miss Duck.
Oh, wow, it's getting a little hostile around here for a Friday.
Boy, it feels good, though, does it not, Polly? I mean, to be broadcasting on a cowbell Friday, especially with your skinny jeans on, Paul.
Okay. All right.
Your Jordache jeans pulled up around your neck. Break out the neon comb or the jackhammer and brush back that plastered hair, Paul.
Loverboy was cool for like 2 weeks in the early 80s.
Brush it back. Everybody's working.
And you guys are rocking this song for like two decades. It's inexplicable. It's inexcusable. It's unacceptable.
We tried to get rid of it, Polly.
I mean,
the basin wouldn't have it.
We don't need more cowbell. That was a joke. That was a Saturday Night Live skit. We don't want it. We don't need it.
We tried to get rid of it.
Just
budget.
Cease and desist already.
Sorry, folks, that we have Paul Calvisi on the show. You're going to have to deal with it for 2 weeks. Because Paul's grumpy because he knows Lambeau is coming.
That's why
Paul's in a bad mood.
December 2nd.
I mean, he knows Lambeau is coming and standing out there in Wisconsin in December.
Let the Cal quarterback go for it on fourth down. I don't care how bad the pass was on third down and two. Let him go for it on fourth down. What are you doing? Stinking 12s get a win last night they didn't deserve. Can't stand Seattle.
What was Mike McCarthy doing?
I mean, well, you know what he's doing. He was basically saying, I want to get fired, and you will be fired.
How do you not go for that?
You know what's interesting?
You're done.
Seattle has always been a tough out under Pete Carroll, haven't they?
Yes.
I mean, honestly, you have to admit that. They may have saved their season last night. I say may have, based on Ian's right. I'm not into the prediction game.
Even though that was their first win in a long time all season in a one-score game, they'd been gagging games down the stretch. They did pull it off last night.
Think of how Seattle started that game last night. I mean,
down
you got to be
14-3.
I thought for sure
done.
Second, fumble on the second play.
I thought
third?
They'd be done. Yep. No, it was the first play.
Was it the first play?
Yes, absolutely. Fumbled it. Russell Wilson inaccurate, overthrew wide open receivers. Right, Doug Baldwin, Tyler Lockett looked erratic in the beginning, the first quarter at least. Chris Carson fumbled the ball on Seattle's first play from scrimmage. Green Bay scored a touchdown off it. You can't start any worse. Four false starts. At home.
False start field got the Seahawks
four
horrendous O-line.
Starts.
Not the opponent, but the home team.
No, but you know what? Their O-line, you can say they're horrendous, Paul. I'm telling you right now, they know how to run the ball. They come off the ball with a dark heart and smash your face in. It's what I was saying. And what do? 156 yards rushing by the Seattle Seahawks.
Of course, Green Bay was missing their two interior D tackles, right? Mike Neal and the other guy. So, it's Green Bay's defense, especially on the road, is awful. What you had last night were two 500 teams. Two teams who do not deserve a wild card. Neither one does. They're both 500 teams, and I hope we don't see them in the postseason, either one.
There's a chance one of them gets in. So I don't know if you caught the very end of this or if you were watching any other college football last night. But last night there was a very weird situation that happened. Ed Oliver, who is, I admit, my favorite player coming out in the 2019 NFL draft, he was legitimately hurt. But some people are claiming that Ed Oliver then is milking it now and doesn't want to get back on the field to protect himself for the NFL draft.
I bet.
So some people are saying, no, he's not saying that at all. He did send out a tweet that said of how hard he's working, but some people think he meant it to go to the draft. And he says, no, I meant to get back on the field. Well, he's standing there on the sideline. It's cold, and he's in Houston, and the coach – old Texas coach Major Applewhite tells him to take off the team-issued coat. Said the coat's only for active players.
Oh, wow.
They get into a massive argument about it, and that's now gone viral. I bring this story up because that's what we were talking about when we had Steve Keim on the show. And Steve Keim, I asked him, you know, kind of jokingly, that would it affect his decisions at all about a player who gets in an argument with their head coach about a coat.
If you're evaluating the 2019 draft and a player is cold and he gets an argument with his coach about a coat,
Would that affect your desire to draft that player at all?
I cannot confirm or deny that I'm flying out of Houston this morning.
I cannot confirm or deny that I'm flying out of Houston this morning.
Okay, Major Applewhite, number one, believes that Ed Oliver is tanking, correct? I mean, that's what he believes.
I'm assuming I don't
for
know
him
that.
For him to do what he did, take that coat off if you know what's good for you.
So, I mean, are you was it a game time decision that Ed Oliver didn't play? Otherwise, why is Steve Keim going to Houston if he knew Ed Oliver isn't playing in the game? Was it a surprise to everyone that Ed Oliver is not playing?
I
didn't know he was going to Houston.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Where did that
come from? What did he just say?
Yeah, that's what he just said.
I wasn't listening.
Are you listening to your own show, Wolf?
I wasn't listening to what he was saying right here. I mean, I don't think he was talking about going to Houston to watch Ed Oliver, right?
That's exactly what he was talking about.
Okay. Unless I'm on another wavelength here. Isn't that what you were just saying, Doug?
Doesn't he have family in Houston?
I don't know.
Okay.
Honestly, don't know.
Yeah, I thought he did, but that's just me. Again, I digress.
I would think that when he says, I cannot confirm or deny that I'm flying out of Houston this morning.
Yes.
He was in Houston to do some background checks on Ed Oliver.
Okay.
Wouldn't he have known
whether or not he was going to play, right?
I think he would have. The other thing that was really interesting from Steve Keim is how well he handled the famous question, okay, who's on the hot seat right now? Because just about every article I read mentions Steve Wilks on the hot seat, but he's very low on the hot seat list because of the fact it's a first-year head coach. And it always is prefaced by the, how does the rest of the season go? It's like, it's definitely something that to keep an eye on, but he's just on the list. When we asked Steve Keim, is he on your hot seat list?
Shoot, how many of those is my one? You know, I mean, it's one. Hey, listen, this is a results-based business. And at the end of the day, not only do we internally have expectations, but the fans, I know, have expectations, and rightfully so. And this year has certainly not gone in the direction that we anticipated. But that's something that I'm not even focused on right now. Right now, it's all about winning football games and showing progress, the type of progress that gets us excited and propels us into 2019, which, again, I'm starting to see a lot of things that are exciting me, and not only on the offensive side of the ball, but some things defensively as well.
Can I just say quickly right here that if, in fact, the Arizona Cardinals don't go out and play well against the Raiders, play well and win the game, I'm going to be really disappointed.
Should be.
Because to me, I think they're building a foundation right now. If they go out and squeak by beating them a three spot or a field goal, whatever it may be, I'm going to be really disappointed.
I'm here to say, take Steve Wilks' name off the hot seat list. If you indeed have his name on the hot seat, take it off right now. That's inaccurate.
I would say to Wolf's point, you got a massive leadership problem if you lose to the Raiders. That's not even the coaching situation.
I want to see him play well and win.
Coming up next, what are the chances Zach Greinke is pitching for the Diamondbacks in 2019? You need to know what's been said secretly. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Soft. Are you talking to me? Detroit Lions football player? Yeah! Ray! Smack! Big anonymous!
I miss you, Yoda.
Ray! Not wanting to practice outside in the cold weather. Situation, you only have one game left where you're going to play in cold weather,
Pantera call out brought to you by AutoNation, 13 dealerships in the valley, over 100,000 new pre-owned vehicles as well on AutoNation.com. Find what you're looking for today. I don't know why we ever stopped, but we used to give out Pantera Fuchsal t-shirts if you correctly guess the Pantera call out.
Fuchsal, the thing you say when you don't know what to say.
And Yoda and I had this big battle of who could guess who was going what Wolf was going to call out. So I basically started, you know, I don't know how to trying to put the fix in.
Fusha.
Of throwing out a subject matter to Wolf right before the Pantera call-out.
Right.
And it usually
right.
works.
It does.
And
I have no idea it's coming. I have absolutely none. So the last thing I hear or read, that's who's going to get it.
And I had read a story last night I thought was hilarious about 40% of the Lions secretly complaining to the media that Matt Patricia made them practice outside.
You are so soft.
Even though
right
they
now.
Play in an indoor stadium. Like, why do we have to be out of here? And they complained like crazy.
It's so interesting because we talked to Max Starks, ladies and gentlemen, right every Tuesday and Thursday, as a matter of fact, during the football season right here. And Big Max was talking about the fact the Steelers have a culture with their offensive line that you never, ever wear sleeves in a cold weather game. Remember, yeah. And remember why he said that as well. You never wear sleeves because immediately you want the other guy to know he's not dealing with somebody who's soft. That is a mindset. That is a mindset that goes all the way back to Mike Webster, All the way back to John Kolb, Larry Brown, and a guy that was playing left guard by the name of Craig Wolfley. All the way back, we're not gonna wear sleeves. Isn't that right, Steve Corson? We're not gonna wear sleeves.
Speaking of,
that's a mentality. I love it.
Speaking of mindset, I'm getting quite a few tweets at Doug98.7FM, and I'm just going to throw this question out there. Which would frustrate you more, the trading of Paul Goldschmidt
yes,
or the Diamondbacks playing in Scottsdale?
Trading of Goldie.
I have not asked this question, but as a general just kind of feeling out, I'm getting more tweets this morning frustrated about the story of Bob Nightingale has said on Twitter about the Diamondbacks exploring why Atlanta Braves left downtown to move to the northern suburbs in Atlanta versus, okay, now how would that relate to Scottsdale? Then a Paul Goldschmidt trade. Here's the situation if you didn't know. Bob Nightingale is the baseball insider for Major League Baseball, or covering Major League Baseball for USA Today. And he has two amazing tweets of just how hard the Diamondbacks are shopping Zach Greinke.
Yeah.
The possibility of a Greinke-Goldie combo trade.
No.
But
please.
Then another tweet about how heavily investigating they are into the Braves move, how it's working, and more of the real estate around the move, and then how that would relate to a move up the 101. And I had just read an article earlier this week that the highlight was former Suns president Rick Welts, who's now the CEO of Golden State. And how they are building an arena at their expense in downtown San Francisco. But to them, there will be a day where the Warriors are the draw, but not the moneymaker. The moneymaker is the real estate because they're also building office towers, apartments, and stuff like that around it. And it made me think about the Diamondbacks of, okay, it's a lot more inexpensive to build on tribal land.
Mm-hmm.
You could then have this huge real estate complex that has restaurants, shops, apartments.
Hello.
That the Diamondbacks generate revenue on.
Hello.
And wouldn't that be better than downtown? So my theory on this is this. I think if we aren't willing to build a stadium downtown, and it's almost dead in the water nowadays for taxpayers to build a stadium.
Yeah.
I don't think then the Diamondbacks owe all of us to leave to stay in downtown. I want them to stay. I like downtown.
I see what you're saying, though. Now it's a matter of profitability.
But once you decide, no, we're not building a downtown stadium, and that's not an argument I really feel comfortable getting into, because how am I going to change your mind? If I think it's a good idea and you don't, who's going to change their mind on politics? So that's just kind of Yes, Bear.
We have now posted a Twitter poll question at DuganWolf98.7. Would you be more upset if the D-backs .. traded Paul Goldschmidt or moved to Scottsdale?
Okay.
There you go. That's
I'm really interested in your answer on that, because he did not say it's going to happen or anything like that. But Bob Nightingale told us this morning that it is something that is, he would say, yes, you could call it step one in a potential move to Scottsdale.
Okay, once again, if you're not going to have taxpayers pay for stadiums like we've seen in the past, right? doesn't the organization then have every right to go out and make as much money as they possibly
yeah,
can,
and,
right?
And
the
find,
profitability
yeah.
of it whatsoever.
If you're wanting them to
and
build their own stadium, don't they get to choose where they build it?
Exactly right. And not only that, how they can capitalize off building yeah. it right there. I think baseball, it's interesting you bring this up, Douglas, because I think the Atlanta Braves and baseball in particular really has an advantage when you're talking about trying to build a culture around this stadium, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because of the fact that you're playing 81 games, at minimum 81 games a year there.
Yeah.
It's not like the others. It's not like a football stadium, right? It's very difficult to actually do that when you're playing out there eight times a year for the most part, right? I mean, it's I realize that you've got a lot of events that you're hosting out there. I understand all of that, but for the most part, it seems to make a lot of sense. The culture surrounding baseball would attract a certain type of crowd as well.
Mm. So if you get a chance, download the Doug and Wolf podcast. You're really going to need it today to be able to get the latest on the Bob Nightingale conversation, the chances of Greinke pitching for the Diamondbacks in 2019.
I'd be stunned if he is.
Ooh, the chances of Goldie staying for 2019.
I think that was more 50-50.
Isn't that interesting?
That is 50-50 interesting.
He says he looks at Greinke. He just doesn't see there's much of a chance Greinke is staying. He would say Goldie is 50-50. More 50-50 that Goldie is staying.
50-50. Man, we had somebody, I forget who it was recently on, that said it was 90% that Paul was going to be here. Goldie was going to be here with the Diamondbacks.
The reason why I think that number is dropping is just the amount of teams that are interested and the offers that are out there and the opportunity that, okay, they're actively listening. They're doing more than just, okay, call me up if you want him. I think it's more of a, give me your best offer so I can sell
exactly.
Ken Kendrick on
yeah.
the deal. I think it's more about Mike Hazen having such a good deal to convince Ken Kendrick
yes.
and Derek Hall it's a good idea, more than it is what the other teams are offering.
And
it's like you've got to pay the Ken Kendrick price, not the Mike Hazen price.
Although I would not do it based on means intellectually, I understand why you would. Especially the plight of the Diamondbacks right now and the plight of their farm system.
Mm-hmm.
I understand why you would.
Coming up next, Steve Keim. Arizona Cardinals, Raiders, rest of the season. What does he expect to see starting Sunday and from now on? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Raiders on Sunday. Off the top of my head, and I don't know this for sure, but I believe it's at Chargers, at Packers would be the next three games. Let me cheat and look it up. Hey, I got lucky.
Dog, one game at a time.
At Chargers, at Packers, home against the Lions, at Atlanta, home against the Rams, and then in Seattle. Steve Keim, when I gave you that list of games right there, what do you want to see the rest of the way?
Well, you know, I think, Wolf, aside from a roster standpoint, you know, we're seeing a lot of rookies play. I think that'll continue. And some of the guys that we brought in, you know, that come off the street, and we've done a lot of that over the last several years, and just to see where some of those guys are at. Some of them will be guys that will be back on our roster next year, and there'll be some players that aren't. And I want to see some of these guys, you know, really – take one step forward in terms of having this opportunity. You know, again, that's what we sell to these players when they come in for workouts or visits. You know, really, this is another opportunity for you, and take advantage of it.
What do I want to see? Thanks for asking. I'd love to see the Cardinals on the last game of the year in Seattle knock the Seahawks out of the playoffs with a win against the 12s right there in their own house, where they had, what, a half dozen false starts at False Start Field
yeah,
in their own
that?
Place? I don't know what's going on. So that's A. B, I'd love to see Robert Kimdichie give us something to think about here in the last seven games of the season. Love to see Robert Kimdichie come off this calf injury that's the latest and be a guy the Cardinals can count on going forward.
Yeah, that really is a good point, Paulie. I mean,
if
once
he did,
again,
I'd trade him.
Once again, there are two things that I'm looking for specifically the rest of the season, and that's number one, Josh Rosen continuing to develop as a franchise quarterback. Again, we're not going to know this year, ladies and gentlemen. Even if he goes ahead and rips off eight games in a row, well, let's see, that's impossible. They've already played too many games. Even if he finishes the season by throwing 300 yards per game, Basinonians, You know what? Honestly, it's going to take another season. It's going to take another season before we're going to really know whether or not Josh Rosen is going to be that franchise guy. And the other thing I'd love to see is rush defense. I want to see this defense continue to improve. They are improving. There's no doubt about it. I want to see that defense continue to improve in stopping the run and playing well. And I think Kansas City is a real start to be able to say that. This is an explosive team and was an explosive team and will be the most explosive team by the end of the season. And the Cardinals, I think, played their best game.
There's since Paul started this, and he did a very good job starting it. The thing I want to say, okay, everybody's Josh Rosen. That's easy.
That's the default.
But my number two.
What has to be said.
Is I really want to see, and I think he will, but Byron Leftwich prove he's the 2019 offensive coordinator and going forward. Mm. I have little doubt that he will, but I really want to see that become solidified. And we asked Steve Keim about Byron and what's he done so far that it's impressed him.
Well, I mean, I think it's the creativity, the trying to establish balance. The one thing that Byron really does well, I think, is when you see him run certain plays, there's a rhyme and a reason for everything. It may not be for that particular play in terms of big playability, but it's something that he may be setting up for a few plays later. So really excited about where this offense is going with Byron. And again, I think he's done a really nice job.
That comment right there might be the most relevant comment in the departure of Mike McCoy. Running plays for a reason. Because I can tell talking to guys in the locker room, they felt like the play calling, and everyone, it's so subjective play calling, right? But there was a lot of curiosity as to why are we running this play right now? What does this play have to do with the next play? And what does this series have to do with the next series? And what is this first quarter play calling? And they felt like there was a lot of scattershot play calling, and let's just try this and try that. And the approach now is, not only is he streamlined it, but as you saw in the first win by Byron Leftwich against the Niners, things they did in the first few quarters paid off in the fourth quarter. There are things they're setting up the defense for things later. And that was not happening under Mike McCoy.
You know, I don't need a beat, but I'll open up about a story that is still I remember to this day, and I'm always a little careful.
It's not your Tom Moore story,
no,
is it?
But no, before I go off on
it's
something.
It's always the best.
But there was an offensive coordinator in the NFL that was nice enough that every summer would bring me into his office and teach me his offense and allow me to learn the game of football in a way that most media people don't get access to. And I've still appreciated it like crazy to this day. And I'll never forget one time he put a piece of film up. And he said, tell me what you think about this play. Just what are your general thoughts? And it was a fake end around. You know, a receiver ran all the way around, fake, and then a little bit of a throwback screen, and it went for 40 yards. And I said, how great the play was. Look at the, you know, of course, the play went for 40 yards. And he goes, interesting. And then he puts on another play, which was the actual end around that went for a yard. And he goes, because when I ran this play 3 weeks ago, you ripped me that morning on my way in. And I wasn't running that play for this game. Oh, I didn't care what kind of yards I was going to get here. I wanted to get that on film. And now let's go back and watch this screen. And you saw everybody running to the end around. About nine guys going to the end around. And he goes, so I think my play 3 weeks ago was a pretty good one, don't you? And I was so unprepared for that moment. And I bring that up because of exactly what you just said. If people in the Cardinals players were wondering, what are you setting up? And now they already understand what Byron Leftwich is doing. Man, are you light years ahead.
Here's the other thing I'm getting out of locker room, guys, is that previously the Cardinals were ultra sensitive and maybe too aware of what the defense was doing. And if the defense does this, we're going to do this. And there's going to be all these different derivatives.
Yeah.
Now, under
just
Byron Leftwich, we're going to do what we do,
yeah, that's good.
And they're going to react to us. And that's a complete change in philosophy, and I think that's made a big difference for offensive guys. A, it's much easier to understand and comprehend and execute. They're playing faster. They're thinking less. And B, it gives them confidence.
And confidence, yeah.
We go out there, we do what we do, and then they have to react to us.
Yeah, that's a great point, Paulie. But it does make me think of Bill Belichick once again and the genius of Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots and the fact that he's his belief, his identity, Basinonians, is the fact that he's going to be whatever he needs to be to beat you. You know what I mean? And again, that's the reason why he goes out and he gets players that are really, really smart. Athletically, maybe they're sevens, maybe they're eights. And everyone's looking for nine and tens in the NFL, right? But maybe they're sevens, maybe they're eights athletically, but they're tens mentally. And he does that because they can morph. They can do anything they need to do to beat you because they can remember what it is they need to do and their job. And you can literally make adjustments on the sideline in the middle of a game, in the middle of a quarter, you can make adjustments. And guys that are tens mentally get it.
We need to make a big announcement to Tim Kempton right now.
Five-star games. Five-star games. Five-star games. Five-star games. College football's best game with Doug and Wolf.
Brought to you by Am Better from Arizona Complete Health. Better is taking charge of my health.
Listen very quickly and very carefully, Tim Kempton. There are no five-star games.
Oh, five-star game with Doug and Wolf.
Yeah, B-Train.
At Yankee Stadium, Notre Dame is hosting Syracuse. That's a 3-12, okay? There's just one thing. It's the ACC, and it doesn't include Clemson. That's not five-star.
Wow. Wow.
When Notre Dame gets smashed by 30 points in the playoff, then you could say, oh, they belonged in. They belonged. No. Notre Dame, I don't care what their record is. They're Notre Dame. Overrated. If you put that exact same schedule for UCF to play, they'd have the exact same record, and they wouldn't get in. So Notre Dame? Go ahead, knock off Syracuse, act like you've beaten somebody good, and then guess what happens when you get slaughtered in the playoffs?
It sounds awful personal over there, Doug. It's getting a little personal.
The overrated thing, too. It's the worst cheer
ever. I'm the only Catholic that can't stand Notre Dame.
Overrated!
That is a dumb cheer. I agree with that.
Right? Just shut it.
Because that means your team stinks.
So where do you put Alabama against the Citadel? If Notre Dame-Syracuse is not a five-star game, where's Alabama for some stinking reason playing the Citadel,
Doug? We don't have stars for that one, I admit. There's no stars for that.
Let's think of something overrated.
By the way, I found a fantastic question. There was one TV station that was asking this question in Alabama, and no, they weren't saying that Alabama could beat the Raiders.
It's not the Friday before Thanksgiving.
But they were asking the question, is the gap bigger between Alabama and the Raiders or Alabama and the number 3 team in the country? That's a pretty good question.
Yeah.
6 days off in the next 9.
Like to see Harbaugh against Alabama. I want to see Harbaugh. Give him a month. I want to see Harbaugh against Alabama. I just want to see it in the playoff game. Come on.
That's right, Paul.
Come watch ASU Oregon. They're going to take on, or they're going to be with Arizona Sports tomorrow with cold beer and cheeseburgers. Higley and Queen Creek and Gilbert will be giving you ASU gear. You could win it. You get tickets to the Territorial Cup. You might win that. The game will be in Tucson, by the way, if you're wondering. And other great prizes from Coors Light. Visit the events page at arizonasports.com for details.
Tucson?
That's what it says right there. Tucson. Just do what you're told. Coming up next, Sunday, the most winnable game left on the Cardinals' schedule. We'll ask Bucky Brooks next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. You can see him all over NFL.com and on the NFL Network. Bucky Brooks just grabbed the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line to talk ball with us. Bucky went to North Carolina. Bucky, are you okay with how much attention Zion Williamson and Duke basketball is getting right now, or is that driving you nuts?
I mean, it's driving me a little nuts, but I am fascinated by what they've assembled there. The one thing that I try and take solace in is I know that those guys are only going to be at Duke for 1 year. We'll be back to kind of lording over the ACC, hopefully, shortly thereafter.
Well, Bucky,
if you had to pick one position for Zion Williamson, what would it be? I mean, honestly, on the football field.
You know the way that tight end is.
You talk about a dude who is so athletic, and it's kind of depressing me as an old football scout to see someone with that size, that kind of athleticism, to think about what he could be. As much as we talk about that guy being a standout tight end, imagine his athleticism and footwork at a left tackle.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
What he would be able to do, like, in terms of that, or even put him on the other side if he had a national mentality, wanted to be a pass rusher. Like, I am obviously jaded because having been at Carolina when we took Julius Peppers and watched his athleticism and how he's been able to dominate the league, to think someone on the basketball court that can do those things, to put him in pass man, the imagination just kind of runs rampant with the thoughts and possibilities of what Zion Williamson could be.
That's good. Julius Peppers could play ball, too, both ways, football and basketball. We're talking to Bucky Brooks, who's joining us right now, and he also does some mock drafts with NFL.com, really into the draft as we get closer. This is going to sound funny, Bucky. I want to ask you about the 2018 NFL draft. Knowing what you know now on November 16th, where would you draft Josh Rosen?
Look, I was one of Josh Rosen's biggest fans when it came to how he played, his readiness in terms of being an NFL quarterback. Some of that comes from personal experience. I coach high school ball out in L.A. When Josh was a sophomore at St. John's Bosco, my team, Notre Dame High School, we faced off with Josh Rosen and had a great appreciation for his game walking off the field. And so to watch him grow and mature into a player, I know he's a high IQ guy. He's a guy who has all the physical characteristics that you look for in traditional franchise quarterbacks. And I believe that people kind of missed the boat on what he was. The fact that he was the 10th overall pick, drafted behind guys like Josh Allen, you can debate whether he was better than Baker Mayfield or even Sam Darnold. I don't understand why he wasn't a top five pick, but I think if you're the Arizona Cardinals, I think you should be excited about what he is and what he will be in an offense that is eventually built around his talent.
Boy, you know what? Honestly, I agree with you 100% on that one. I really do in regard to Josh Rosen. I think a lot of people misread this kid big time. We're talking to Bucky Brooks here on the Doug and Wolf Show. Bucky, what's trending in the National Football League right now? When you think of the NFL, what do you think is trending? What's new? What's fresh? What's happening?
You know, I think there are a couple things that are trending in the National Football League. I think, obviously, everyone looked at the creativity that is being displayed by some of the top offenses, the Kansas City Chiefs, the L.A. Rams. What you're seeing are a lot of things that we see on Saturdays kind of trickle into the pro game on Sundays. Fly sweep motion, double motions. We're seeing RPOs. We're seeing quarterbacks, young quarterbacks, have a lot of success because their coaches I'll put them in situations where they can just kind of play the game loosely and freely like they've done on Friday nights and Saturday nights before they made their way into the league. I think those things are certain trends. But I think the other thing that is trending, if you don't have a team that is necessarily constructed to play that kind of style, I think the old tried and true adage of kind of leaning on the running game gives you an opportunity to have success. If you look at last night's game with the Seattle Seahawks, a team that is number one in rushing, they're able to kind of tip the scales back into their favor because they can run the ball.
Yep.
As these defenses load up on small guys that can rush the passer, it's only a matter of time before the offensive cycle trickles back to putting big guys on the field, more tight ends, more big bodies, more power running game to see if they can hold up and withstand the power running that is available. I think when you look at the Seattle Seahawks and the Washington Redskins, those are two teams that may rank in the middle of the pack. But I think the good coaches are going to look at how they're playing and say, you know, if everyone is making it a passing league, maybe we need to be a physical run team because that's going to be harder to defend when people aren't doing it
as much.
That's
a great point, Buck.
Bucky, did you mean all that or were you just sucking up to a former fullback because Wolf is losing his mind right now in excitement of what you just said?
No. I think the trend is there. I think there are a couple things that people are missing the boat on. One, the devaluation of the running back kind of drives me crazy. I think the thing is the running back is more valuable than ever now. It's just that the running back that is valued is a guy that can run and catch the ball out the backfield. Obviously, you guys are there in Arizona. You know with David Johnson, when David Johnson is utilized and given the ball not only as a runner but as a receiver, it makes a difference to that offense. And so the good offensive coordinators are finding a way to find what I call those hybrids, those guys that can do it as runners and receivers. They maximize their ability to impact the game by not only featuring them as runners, by putting them in space, giving them ball in the, out of the backfield on option routes and swings, and allowing them to enjoy favorable matchups against linebackers. I think the league is trending where your running backs are arguably the second most important offensive piece behind the quarterback because they can alleviate so much pressure on young quarterbacks in particular.
Bucky Brooks joining Doug and Wolf. You can see him on NFL.com. He's heavy into scouting, watching for trends, watching for players, but also he was a player. He was a corner, played for the Raiders at one point since the Cardinals are playing the Raiders. Listening to what you just said, utilizing David Johnson correctly and young offensive coordinator. So let me combine both of those two things you said and ask this. Is Byron Leftwich destined to be a good head coach, great head coach, offensive coordinator? Do you like what you're seeing now since Mike McCoy was let go from the Cardinals?
Yeah, you know, and this is tough for me because Mike McCoy is a dear friend of mine. We were teammates in Green Bay, and we also worked together in Carolina. But I will say Byron Leftwich has done a great job of basically taking what Bruce Arians was doing with David Johnson and reintroducing it into the offense. We've seen in the last couple of weeks, David Johnson has gotten more carries, more touches. David Johnson was a major factor in that game against Kansas City because he was a guy that they kind of built the offensive game plan around. And, in fact, it was what I thought this offense was going to do very early in the year with Josh Rosen. Lean on number 31, allow him to be the bell cow, and then allow Josh Rosen to kind of ease into the game. We have seen that since Byron Leftwich has come back into the fold. And, yes, I do believe Byron Leftwich is eventually destined to be a head coach. I don't believe it necessarily happened in this cycle, but I think what people are looking for, they're looking for young, creative offensive minds who understand how to build an offense while also elevating the play of the quarterback. I think we've seen some flashes and glimpses that Byron Leftwich understands how to do that. They probably want to see a longer track record, but I think he is definitely trending in the right direction.
Bucky, sorry to do this to you, but we got about a minute here. What is going to be the depth? What kind of strength does this 2019 draft have?
You know, if your team looking for offensive personnel, you can be disappointed at the top of the draft. This is a defense-heavy draft. This is a defensive draft that is loaded with defensive linemen, pass rushers, everything that you want to build a strong defense. If you're looking to upgrade your offense, you have to turn to free agency because there just aren't many marquee players there. And so when we look to the draft, I think a lot of the focus will be just on the big bodies down in the trenches. There may be 8, 9, 10 guys on the defensive line that find themselves with first-round grades. It is a draft that if you want to get better on defense, you're happy. If you're looking for offense, you're probably a little disappointed.
Man, this was a real enjoyable talk on ball, which is a bad move by you because now we're going to bug you even more than we already are. That was really good to talk to you. Anything to promote? When's the next? If somebody wants more Bucky Brooks in their life, how can they get it?
Well, I'm just about to publish my notebook. We're going to talk about, are the Steelers better off without Le'Veon Bell? I'm going to say no. And then should the Cardinals pay big – I mean, should the – Titans pay big money for Marcus Mariota. That's some of the topics in my notebook.
Good. That's interesting.
Bucky, thank you, man.
Good to talk to you.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on, guys.
Absolutely. There's
Appreciate
Bucky Brooks
you,
joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. You can go to Coulter on Camelback.com, CoulterTempe.com, or CoulterNissan.com for your next new or pre-owned car. Couple different people today talking about one man for the Arizona Cardinals, and it's not a player. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.